The following is an excerpt from the Science Magazine podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
David Graham, Science's online news editor, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news, including a story about robotic hands that don't have any fingers. How do they grab onto things, Dave?
That's a good question, Rob. And the trick is that instead of fingers, these hands have these rubber sacks that are filled with coffee grains or sometimes small glass spheres. Almost think of it almost like a little beanbag sack at the end of these robotic appendages.
I've never been able to pick up anything with a beanbag, Dave.
Well, it's not just a beanbag. What it is it's a beanbag, and there's a small pipe that sucks air from the beanbag. And you can see a picture of this and actually a video of what this looks like on the site and how it works. But basically, what will happen is the robot will move its hand over a pencil. This sack will lay down on the pencil, and then this tube that's running into the sack will actually suck air out of the sack, and that causes the sack to mold its shape around whatever object that is, whether it's a pencil or in some cases there were 1 gallon jugs of water, whatever it is, this sack molds to the shape, and then when the robot picks its arm up, the object gets picked up as well.
What prompted researchers to develop this type of new hand?
Well, Rob, a lot of engineers, when they design robots, they actually make them look a lot like people. They have legs and arms and fingers just like we do. But the problem with robotic fingers is they tend not to work nearly as well as our fingers do. They tend to be very clumsy. They slip when they try to pick up objects, or they grasp objects too hard and break them. In this new study, the researchers showed that this sack hand could actually pick up an egg and not break it. And they're also very difficult to manipulate. If you imagine you've got a computer that not only needs to control the movement of the arms, but the movement of 10 digits at the same time, and you're talking about very complex equations. So these researchers are really looking for a simpler way to make hands, even if they don't look like our hands.
Any limitations to what this hand can pick up?
Well, they have some limitations. First of all, there's a weight limitation. If the object's too heavy, the hand can't pick it up. Also, the hands had some problems with porous objects like cotton balls. And that's because, you know, when these hands grasp these objects, the tube is sucking out air. And if you've got something porous like a cotton ball, that allows air to travel through it, and therefore the hand can't mold around the object just as well as it could.
Any likelihood that this could be something that might help amputees?
Well, Rob, that's one of the cool applications of this technology is you can imagine with a artificial hand like this, you could do things that you might not be able to do very easily with robotic fingers, like swipe a credit card or even pick up a fork. Could be a lot easier with these hands. The only downside being that for somebody maybe interested in their appearance, these don't look as much like human hands.
Okay, well, thanks, Dave. So what other stories have we brought with you this week?
Well, Rob, from a new technology to help create artificial hands to a new technology that could alleviate one of the most annoying things about air travel, having to take your shoes off your feet. Rob, this story is all about an explosive known as triacetone triperoxide, or TATP for short. And this is an explosive that gained notoriety in 2001 when Richard Reed, also known as the shoe bomber, tried to detonate one of his shoes that was filled with TATP on a flight from Paris to Miami. And that's the reason most of us have to take our shoes off in the airport these days, because airport security is trying to detect the presence of this and other explosives in footwear.
So what's the new technology? A new detector for this substance?
Exactly. The idea is we have to take our shoes off because this chemical is not very easy to detect. There's some other explosives that are a lot easier to detect. They glow in ultraviolet light, or they have some other obvious characteristics that are easy to detect, but not so with TATP. But it does give off a little bit of a vapor, and that's what the scientists seized on in this study. They said, if we can develop an easy way to detect this vapor in really minuscule quantities, we could potentially develop a portable device that you could just wave past somebody's shoes. And if the device said the shoes were okay, the person could proceed through the security line and not have to take his or her shoes off.
So how does this technology work?
Well, Rob, the key is an acid catalyst known as Amberlist 15. And basically what happens is when a vapor wafts off TATP. It reacts with this catalyst, and the AmberList 15 breaks the TATP down into acetone and peroxide, and these are both chemicals which can alter the colors of what's called a colorimetric array. And you can see a picture of this on the website. Basically, what this is a series of dots of various colors, and what would happen is you would waft a sample over these, and the colors would change if there was TATP present. Now, that's not very feasible for a security line, but there's already a company that's taking this finding and running with it, and basically they're trying to develop a portable device that would do much the same thing, but in a much more compact way that would be easy to use for airport security personnel.
Beyond alleviating our inconvenience and having to take our shoes off in order to fly, are there any other uses for this technology?
Well, Rob, researchers have used similar technologies for less critical purposes. In fact, there was a similar device developed to differentiate between different brands of coffee. So this could be something that would be important for the manufacturing industry, the food and drug industry. A lot of places could benefit from this. It'd just be a very easy way to tell a lot about a product or a chemical without having to do a lot of very complicated tests.
Okay. So last story, what's this last one about?
Well, Rob, from exploding shoes to an explosion of oxygen in early Earth, this last story is about how complex life may have gotten its start about 500 million years ago.
What happened then?
Well, Rob, before this time, the Earth was a very uninhabitable place. At least for you and me, it would be very uninhabitable. The main problem was that there was very little oxygen in the air. So you can imagine that any life forms, and especially the complex life we think about today that relies on oxygen, wouldn't have been around then. But all of a sudden, around 500 million years ago, you've got this explosion of oxygen in the atmosphere. You've got complex life starting to develop, and eventually you have the kind of life we see today. Now scientists think they have an answer to what triggered this explosion of oxygen in the atmosphere. And there's been a lot of hypotheses, but what makes this one different is it's actually a very ironic hypothesis. It has to do with something called snowball Earth. And this is a condition, this has happened a few times in Earth's history, where the entire planet is basically encased in ice, or almost the entire planet. The oceans are frozen over, there's ice over most of the land masses, and you pretty much have a planet that, for all intents and purposes, looks a bit like a snowball. Now, you would imagine conditions like this would be very counterproductive for life. But what researchers say in this study is that these conditions may have actually helped trigger a very important event that seeded the skies with oxygen.
And that was?
Well, Rob, what they think happened is that when you have all these glaciers forming, just like when glaciers form today, they rub up against rocks and they kind of shred these rocks up. And when these glaciers retreat, they release phosphorus from these rocks, from these ground up rocks. And in the researchers' scenario, what happens with this phosphorus is it washes into the ocean. And this is a very important nutrient for algae, and algae are photosynthesizers. They take energy from the sun, they breathe in carbon dioxide, and they breathe out oxygen. So all of a sudden, you're giving tons of food to these algae. And the researchers speculate there was a couple snowball Earth events that happened right before this 500 million year ago explosion in oxygen into the atmosphere. And so what the researchers think happened is after these snowball Earth episodes, a bunch of phosphorus got dumped into the ocean that caused these algae to basically start eating and breeding out of control. And they emitted a lot of waste product into the atmosphere, waste for them, which was oxygen.
So is there evidence that there were these multiple snowball Earths that happened one after the other like this?
Well, Rob, that's one criticism of the study. According to one view, there was only one snowball ice retreat, and that was at the end of a 10 million year long glaciation. And that may sound like a long time, but it's actually a very brief amount of time. And this expert says that was too brief a pulse, he says, to seed the oceans with the amount of phosphorus that would be required for a long-term expulsion of oxygen into the atmosphere. But other experts say that this is actually a really promising scenario, and it could actually be true. Still needs a lot of testing to figure it out, but in the meantime, it remains a very intriguing and ironic hypothesis.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for the site?
Well, Rob, for Science Now, just in time for the Halloween holiday here in the U.S. and in some other countries around the world, we have the gruesome tale of the headless dragonfly. And this is a dragonfly that was trapped in amber for over 100 million years. We've also got a story about new insights into human origins. And for Science Insider, Science's policy blog, we've got a story about suicides in the U.S. military, and also a story about a mysterious anonymous online group that's accusing various stem cell researchers of scientific fraud. So be sure to check out all of these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out the latest science news, plus all the stories on the science policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org.